Deep breath. And exhale. Take another nice deep breath. And exhale. And just feel yourself relaxing, kind of coming home to your essence, to your energy, to your natural brilliance. It's nothing out there, it's all in here. And it flows and it ripples easily and effortlessly. And in this rippling and in this arising of who you really are, your connection to everything and everyone is so palpable, so easy, so natural. And feel your connection to Steve, to me, to all of those that are on this call, and all of those who have come before and are here and rippling now and always into consciousness, into coming more and more alive and aware, and feeling the breadth and depth of that. It's inevitable. It's so powerful. And it's here. And it's now. And you're it. So take another nice deep breath. And exhale. And if you're not listening to the webcast, come away from being on the computer. If you've got a pad or a pencil, just have it kind of near you. And if something pops up during the call, just capture it. And know that everything that you need is at your reach. And whatever is for you on this call is yours already. Thank you. It is my pleasure to welcome Steve Behrman, Swami Beyondananda, onto this call. I've been reading Steve's material online for years, and it has always lightened and opened me up to more and more and more of going beyond the assumptions that I've had. And Steve is going to be talking today about a book that he co-wrote with Bruce Lipton called Spontaneous Evolution. And the topic of our conversation today is our positive future and a way to get there from here. Steve is an internationally known author and spiritual political uncommentator. And he's been doing this for the past 22 years. He's also been performing comedy as Swami Beyondananda. And he has a bio much, much bigger than that, but it's very telling that Steve gave me a very minimalist bio to share with you. He's authored several books and has been very, very active. I was speaking with someone earlier today about all the people that came before now, all the people in the 60s and the 70s and the 50s and the 40s, going back, all the folks who were really at the edge of the unknown place and just dove off. I know Steve has been one of these people that has been really moving and grooving in consciousness for a long time now. So if you want to know more about Steve, his website is wakeuplaughing.com. And we're going to give you some information later on in the call of where you can get the book. And he's also provided a nice bonus for us, which you folks will be getting later on this week with all the other bonus providers for the series. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you so much, Adela, and I really appreciate you beginning with that wonderful meditation and breathing, because as we all know, breathing is the key to long life, right?
It sure is.
Just keep breathing, and you'll live a long time.
Yeah, real simple, right? That's it. We solved
That's
the whole...
Simple key.
Simple key.
To be.
Yeah.
And so I appreciate the opportunity to be talking today about this and relating this book that Bruce Lipton and I wrote, Spontaneous Evolution, to the domain of business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without going, I mean, that's a 450-page book. There's a lot to it. But the basic, if I had to boil down the basic idea, is that so much of what we see out there as bad news, the things that seem to be falling apart, simultaneously to things falling apart, there is something that is falling together, and that is a new organism called humanity. And each of us human beings, is a cell in this new organism called humanity. Now, this humanity organism may not exist in the flesh right now, not fully formed, but it exists in the field, and we are picking up signals. The historian Arnold Toynbee talked about times when civilizations were in their decline, and there was always a group that he called creative minorities. And these are the people who are able to poke their heads outside of the matrix of beliefs and begin to recognize that what the next thing was that was going to be happening. Well, we have those with us today in the form of what Paul Ray calls cultural creatives. And cultural creatives are a segment of the population who are coming to recognize that we are connected, we're all related, and that a healthy human being cannot be seen apart from a healthy community or a healthy humanity or a healthy world. And there are about 70 million adult Americans who fit this category, about 35% of our population. But because these ideas are so new and they're so formulative, this demographic is not on the radar yet. So consequently, we find ourselves talking to one another and not recognizing how many of us there are. There's a wonderful biological metaphor that expresses where we seem to be right now. Imagine yourself in this thriving caterpillar civilization, and you know you're crawling on the ground, you're consuming like crazy, because caterpillars are the classic consumers. Everything is fine, and then all of a sudden, things stop working, and cells begin to fall apart, and things begin to crumble. And you go, what's going on? What's going on? It's all falling apart. The sky is falling. Meanwhile, there are these new cells, which are actually called, in biology, imaginal cells. And these imaginal cells are the first newborn cells of the butterfly organism. And they begin to pop up, and at first they're anomalous. They don't fit in anywhere, but eventually, and rather quickly, they begin to communicate with one another. They begin to connect with one another. And at some point, they form a community, and their field becomes more strong than the caterpillar field, and the transformation takes place from caterpillar to butterfly. Now, what's very, very interesting about this is that the caterpillar and the butterfly have the exact same DNA. The only difference is the difference in the signal they are receiving. So metaphorically and in reality, here we are, that we know human beings are human beings, and some of us are stuck in the caterpillar signal. If you're focused on the news, which really isn't very new at all, it should be called the olds. If you're focused on the mainstream news, it's all caterpillar out there. However, as we are on this conversation, and many of the people on the call, in fact, probably everybody on the call, is involved in a community, a real-world community, an online community, where you are involved in growing this new butterfly organism. So if we begin to look at what the relationship is between spontaneous evolution and business, and of course, business cannot be set apart from anything else in this holistic conversation. We call business sustainable abundance in the book. Mm-hmm. And sustainable abundance means that we are using the resources that we have in a way to produce the maximum value, that is, the maximum happiness and economic growth in this new world that we're living into, is the growth of several things. Number one, it's food that comes from the ground, locally grown, organic food that helps to essentially feed the entire community. And you know, food, as an economist from the 1930s, Carl Wilkins, said, all new wealth comes from the soil. And if you stop to think about that, I know we're rather urbanized, and we're pretty far away from the farmland, but if you think about it, every year you can put a little kernel of corn in the ground, And lo and behold, with very little cultivation, this corn stalk pops up, and there's, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 ears of corn. In other words, you've multiplied this one little ear of corn by a factor of 10,000 or so, and this happens every year. So essentially, the earth provides its own multiplying loaves and fishes, and all we have to do is cultivate that. So the first aspect of wealth is renewable wealth in the form of food that comes from the ground. The second aspect of wealth is the virtually infinite energy that we get from the sun. And that's our power source. That's our power source, and, you know, notwithstanding the some things that will be happening in regards to zero-point energy and all of those things that are right now outside of our little matrix here, we have the energy from the sun. And so if we did nothing in the energy domain but use our resources to figure out how to inexpensively magnetize and magnify the energy from the sun, we have more than we need. So we have food and energy. Now we start to bring in the two human factors, the things that we human beings have that are the multipliers of wealth, and that is love and imagination. Because if you think about it, when love and nurturance is applied, we actually are more efficient. You know, if you think it's like the old joke that that the Swami has used about somebody who was unwanted as a child and now he's wanted in 12 states. So, you know, we begin to recognize that if we do take care of our children, if we do nourish our greatest natural resource when they're young, we're less likely to pay the price to put them in prison when they're older, and we actually end up creating a more harmonious world which operates more efficiently. And then beyond love, we have imagination. We have the ability, our mental abilities that we use to multiply the resources that we have. If we look at the great changes in the computer and communications industry over the past 20 years, we see how much more efficiently we work. You know, I wrote my first book, you know, back in the 70s. I used a typewriter with whiteout and, you know, and that sort of thing. You know, we have cell phones. We have the Internet. And so communication is very, very rapid, and that is a factor in multiplying our wealth. The fifth factor, and this perhaps is the most important, it's community. As Bruce Lipton and I studied the patterns of evolution from the time that we started out as single-cell organisms to when we single-cell organisms became multi-cell organisms, and to when multi-cell organisms combined in formulations of great complexity like you and me, we, by the way, are communities of upwards of 50 trillion cells. Now, if you think about it, we only have about 6.5 billion human beings on the planet. But if you multiply that by a factor of thousands, we have 50 trillion cells underneath our skin. And in this cellular community, we have harmony, we have cooperation, we have very sophisticated technology. We have a system where all of the cells thrive. So we have universal health care, we have full employment, we have no cell left behind. And the organs cooperate with one another. You very rarely hear about the liver invading the pancreas, demanding the islets of Langerhans. It just very rarely happens. So my point is that nature is such an awesome teacher. It's given us the patterns of success. And so if we look at every pattern of evolution, we see that it involves two things, increase in awareness and increase in community. And so now here we are. We're standing on the threshold of this new evolution where we recognize that we increase our awareness to realize that we are a community of 6.5 billion cells in the body of humanity. So I just wanted to lay that out as a context for any economic conversation that we have, because, again, you know, there's a number of different economic conversations and business conversations. One business conversation is, how do I pay my bills this week? How do I, create cash flow in the short run? How do I? And that's really a survival conversation. If we look at the attempts to repair our damaged institutions, whether we look at the lame attempts at reforming the banking system and the healthcare system, we recognize that doing those kinds of things is as futile as trying to patch up the caterpillar. So then the question comes, how do we build the butterfly economy? What is the butterfly economy? And how are we already a part of the butterfly economy? And then how do we, in the words of the Swami, how do we weave a web of mass construction and become interdependently wealthy? So I'm going to reiterate a little bit of what I said earlier and relate it to this butterfly economy. And then I'm going to open it up for questions. I'm going to see what questions Adela has, and then we'll see questions other people have. So just I want to just briefly summarize what I said and relate it to an economy. The new economy, that is the businesses that are really going to be thriving in this next phase, that will be building the world that we've dreamed is possible, involve five things. They involve clean food, which of course clean water that goes with it. They involve renewable energy and the various delivery systems for such. They involve love, that is in the form of beauty, in the form of nurturance, in the form of caretaking. And they involve imagination, that is they involve technologies that enhance the ability that we have to manufacture and do it in harmony with the earth. And finally, and not the least important, they are businesses that connect community. And so what Adela is doing with these calls, with these business summits and so on, is bringing together a community. And in the context of community, individuals can thrive as they find out about each other's business and figure out how they can support those businesses, and vice versa. So I'm going to turn it back to Adela to see, what the questions are and how we can go forward.
Well, so far we have no questions from our enraptured participants. So,
I got to snap my fingers so they come out of the trance.
Yeah, but I'm sure that folks will come in with some questions. I know that one of the questions that's been coming up over and over during this series, Stephen, is folks are having questions about how they find the right partnerships, how they find these communities. And I know that this is one area, this series is one way that we can start connecting. But this is something also that I've gotten from some of the things that I've read that you've written, is that it's basically a grassroots movement, isn't it?
Yeah, and the grass is rooting for us, by the way, because the trees want to survive too. What seems to be the case is this, is that the forms that we've had, one of the points that we make in the book is that one of the key beliefs of scientific materialism, our current paradigm, mm-hmm. is in survival of the fittest, and that it's me or you. And, of course, we all kind of make noises like we're being cooperative, but we've really all been programmed into this me or you world. And science is now telling us that actually environments evolve together, evolve as a whole, and that which fits with the environment is the most successful. So really, we have thrival of the fittingest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we look at the original meaning of the word competition in the original Greek, what competition meant was striving together. So you can imagine let's say you're a runner, and you go out with a bunch of people to run. You find that running with a group of people and having somebody kind of as the lead car, that really helps you achieve your personal best. Even if you're not trying to beat that person, the fact that there's this energy and that somebody else is running along with you, that is pulling forth your contribution. So if we look at competition not as a me or you, but simply as something that brings out excellence, then that's a healthy way to look at competition. However, it's also really important that we begin to design new forms of joining together. And I came up with a name which I'm sure it's been used before, but instead of corporations, I would call them cooperations. And these are not necessarily, they don't even have to be formalized business relationships. They could simply be informal affiliations where I'll send out your emailing if you send out mine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are the simplest forms. Being in business with somebody, like being in business, in a partnership, in a venture, is a lot like being married.
Yeah.
And just as you might smile at somebody, or you might flirt with somebody, or you might go out with somebody on a date, there are really very, very few people who you're really going to want to be married to. And I think a lot of us have learned this the hard way, where, you know, I'm one of these Enneagram 9s, you know, so I just look for ways of cooperating all the time. And I tend to look at, the qualities that people bring to a conversation, I tend to look at the positive, you know, that, well, they can do this and they can do this and they're this way. And I tend to not really want to look at the gaps and the shortcomings and the issues that are going to, the characteristics that might be problematical. So in terms of creating partnerships, I think it's very, very important in doing a business that, first of all, everybody is very clear about what their strong suit is. What is it that they do the best? And then what is it that they could really use some help with that they don't do well? And if they're forced to do it, they're probably going to do a crappy job. And then you begin to look for the players. You begin to fill in the blanks, you know, depending on who the original players are. We have this quality, we have this skill, we have that talent. However, none of us know how to do this. And so in those cases, either you find somebody who you can hire to do it, or if you, you know, over time feel comfortable enough, bring that person in as a partner or associate. But the key principles to partnering right now is, number one, you want to partner with people right now. Look at it as getting married. If you're in a total business partnership where you own 50-50, you're married to that person. And so those are the kinds of relationships that you want to carefully vet.
Mm-hmm. I know that recently I've been talking, it's interesting you were using the same metaphor, I guess it's so perfect, Steve, that I've been talking about coming together with people, you know, just like the body is an organized intelligence, and you're pointing to some key things that I think are really important, and that's really remaining true to your own essence in terms of the things that you're brilliant at. And it feels like a lot of the partnerships today, too, you need the freedom. So maybe the legal structures of coming together in a formal partnership, I don't think, are as necessary as your autonomy, your ability to come together as needed on a project or on a program, and then, you know, to come apart as needed. I've been seeing that in my own business, that has been working much, much better because everyone is at choice. And it's an alignment of energy around a project or something that's much bigger than you can ordinarily do just by yourself. And in coming together with other people, you can do something much, much more. And there is that unifying vision of something that you want to do together, which really propels the energy.
Yeah, I think that there's something that's really important in what you said, and that is that creating these new forms that are modular, so that you're not, you know, you're in projects with people. You have, and it's always important to have agreements. I mean, really, this has been a lesson that all of us have learned this lesson the hard way, that if you're creating any kind of business agreement, and of course I do it even when I book a show, is there's a letter of agreement. And the purpose of the letter of agreement is not necessarily so you can sue one another in court, but it's rather to provide the clarity so in black and white you both know, oh, I agreed to that. I guess I did. You know, and there we have the agreement. Mm-hmm. So for all of these ventures, it's really good to have agreement. I want to quote somebody who's a friend of mine and who would definitely be of, if you don't have him on your roster or radar, should be. He's Dr. David Gruder, and he's written a lot of work, done a lot of work in regards to what he calls integrity quotient. And he defines integrity as authenticity and connection in three domains. One is authenticity with yourself. So if you're going into a venture, is it truly who you are? Is it resonant with your being? Is this something that you can wholeheartedly get up every morning and go, this is what I'm devoting my life and time to cheerfully? The second is it in integrity with your close loved ones? I mean, how many people, we all know people, maybe we're some of those people, who've spent so much time and energy with ourselves, with our work, with our whatever our absorbing core mission is, that we've neglected these primary relationships, and sometimes these relationships fall away, and it's sad because they die from lack of nourishment. On the other hand, the other extreme is, you know, codependent relationships that actually take your energy from the other end. And then finally, is this work resonant with what you want to see on the planet, with a wholly healed world? So if you're looking at your partnerships and your business, is it true to you? Is it true to the people who are working in the business? And is it true to the ideal of this humanity organism that we're growing into?
Beautiful. Well, we've gotten some questions now, Steve.
All right.
Yeah, they're on a roll here. Okay, great. So from Christine in Boston, how does one person bridge from survival mode to interdependently wealthy? What would you suggest as first 2 to 3 steps for one individual?
Okay, now that's really a huge question, and of course it really depends on the individual. So I'm going to be very simple. In spontaneous evolution, we offer a 3-step program because there's not enough time for 12 steps. Things are dire. And the first step is simply awareness. Now, what I mean by awareness is, first of all, awareness that we are bigger than our beliefs. There's a wonderful story that's more than metaphorical about how elephants are trained in India. And they take a rope, a strong rope, and they tie it around the leg of a baby elephant. They tie the other end of the rope to a post that's not really movable. And the baby elephant pulls and pulls and pulls and pulls until finally it realizes it cannot budge the post. Well, when that baby elephant grows up, all you have to do is tie a rope around the elephant's leg. You don't even have to tie it to anything else. And the elephant stands in place because he knows with that rope around his leg, he can't move. So first thing is to become aware. And again, spontaneous evolution, we offer quite a few stories and ideas about how we are way bigger than what we believe about ourselves. First of all, become aware of the program beliefs that we have that have been keeping us limited, number one. Number two, based on that awareness, set an intention. They say that that necessity is the mother of invention, but intention is the dad. Intention points us in a direction, and it focuses our energy and our attention, our magnetism, so that we can magnetize what we desire. And in that process, you make a choice. You choose. In fact, I'll be very specific about what the choice is. The choice is, do I feed the old story? Do I feed the new story? Do I feed the caterpillar? Do I feed the butterfly? And, you know, we're all caught up in these old stories. I mean, I'm certainly caught up in the old story. The old story is, how am I going to make it through the week? The new story is, how am I going to build this this vision that I have that will make a great contribution to myself, my family, and the world? So, number one, awareness. Number two, make a choice to live into the new story. Set the intention of living into the new story. Number three, what are the actions I can take? What is my daily practice that reinforces the new story and puts me into that picture, onto that path every day, and allows my direction to be true? Now, I know that those are very general. I mean, again, it was a general question as to how to make this shift. But generally, I would say that that's what it is. And then perhaps the most important thing is gather yourself in a community, local or global, of people who are also making those changes. It might be a business-related community, spiritual community, a green business community, an activist community. Whatever it is, be with the people who are doing and who are going for this this transformation as well. They will help you. They'll help you on the basis of you're seeing what they're doing, and some of it you might be able to capture and use. And they will also help you because they will begin to recognize that in this butterfly organism that we're building, again, think of it as 70 million adult Americans. That's your marketplace. That we are each other's marketplace. And that this whole buy local idea is a great idea. But what we're buying local is we're buying local within this evolutionary community of cultural creatives. We're supporting one another with our financial resource by doing business with us first.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the other thing I was going to add to that, Steve, these are awesome, by the way. And I would say this is a template. You know, you can apply this to your business. You can apply this to anything. And the important thing there with the community is these are some of the questions I've gotten too. Some folks may be in areas that are more remote, or there may not be an existing community. And I will say that one of the things that I have found really powerful is if you can't find the community, found the community.
Oh, I like that. Very excellent. You'd be surprised that you will attract the people in your area. The cultural creatives are everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And there is that bit about the intention, just knowing, especially if it's something that you're feeling so strongly, it's like, and you feel it and it doesn't go away. You know, this pull, this magnetic pull to this something new that you're creating, especially around business. There are so many of us that know, you know, there's like this little thing inside of us that says, you know, there's another way. There's another way. And that's, you know, your essence, you know, the brilliance that's you is coming out and saying that to you. And there's loads of people saying the same thing. So when there's a whole bunch of us that come together, that energy is like a mushroom cloud. It just like, it just really gets huge, and it reaches a critical mass, and it moves things. And so it not only moves you, but it moves the whole community. And in moving the whole community, it affects every single individual who is in that community who touches everybody else.
It up levels the entire conversation and the entire environment. You know, I'm just remembering that also in Spontaneous Evolution, we talk about there is a Native American whose name I'm not remembering right now, but upstate New York, he developed a program where he goes into prisons and he works with the inmates. And what he teaches is respect. And there's a circle, which is, of course, you're sitting around the circle, everyone's equal. Everyone's equidistant from the center. There's a talking stick that goes around. And one of the things he tells these men, they're mainly men, is you were put here on Earth with a singular special gift, and there's something that you are here to do that if you don't do it, it won't get done. And with this very, very inexpensive prison program, you know, the recidivism rate is negligible. You know, when normally it's in the 60 to 70% range, with this program it's maybe 12 to 15% people come back to prison. So there's something very powerful about recognizing that instead of trying to hide from our magnificence, that there's something that only we can do. We don't do it, it just simply doesn't get done.
And I think that is one of the challenges sometimes with folks. Like, let's say if you're in your own business. Let's say some folks may have, like, a healing practice or whatever it is that you do, and you see other people out there doing it, and you're like, well, you know, how different am I? You know, what difference does it make? And the thing is that you don't know exactly what difference you do make, how different you are, until you actually step into it and start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's in the doing it and actually just really saying yes to that, that unique way of your delivery comes through. I was talking to someone today, I think earlier today, about, you know, doing someone else's training, and that it's so wonderful. And that even though you do someone else's training, just like when you go to school, then when you go out in the real world and you have your own experience, you add your own unique twist, your own unique flavor. And that's what really makes a difference, and that there are particular people that can hear it from you. And so it's not only about the thing that fills you, that moves you, it's that thing that moves you and fills you touches and can move other people.
Exactly. You know, we are resonant. We're like tuning forks. And my friend Leonard Laskow, who I'll be interviewing for my Heartland Security Radio show, Leonard is a doctor who wrote a book called Healing with Love. And he says that love is the universal harmonic. So in a certain sense, when two tuning forks vibrate with one another, they're in love. And so the way we know the presence of love is, am I vibrating with it? Do I feel harmonious? Do I feel resonant? Or does it feel dissonant? So somebody else may have a vibration that's perfectly loving for them, but it's not our vibration, so it feels dissonant to us. So my joke is that, you know, instead of monopolies, we need to form duopolies, you know. So if you can do duop with somebody and you can harmonize with them, then that's a really good sign. That's an indication that your business is going to be harmonious. Now, you know, I have to say something. When I, just a little while ago, when I put out the email to invite people to this conference call, one of the letters I got was from a woman named, who's got a company called Polaris Business Guides, and her name is, I'm sure I'm going to find it somewhere, yes, her name is somewhere, anyway, and I can, her name is Madeline Gerwick, G-E-R-W-I-C-K, and she said one of the most underrated aspects of business is timing, and that you know, and she's an astrologer, and she has all kinds of statistics about when is a good time to do, you know, there's a season for everything. Sometimes there's a time to be inner, there's a time to be outer. And so she's got some very, very valuable information. There's nothing at stake for me. She's not paying me to say this, but I was certainly moved by the stuff that she sent, and her PolarisBusinessGuides.com, P-O-L-A-R-I-S, BusinessGuides.com, because sometimes you can do the right thing, but if it's done at the wrong time, then you find that your efforts are very effortful,
mm-hmm.
And sometimes the dissonance that we find in our projects have to do with trying to force something to happen at a time when really it's a time to breathe in. You're trying to breathe out, and it's time to breathe in. So I think in part you have to also recognize that business is not about pushing through barriers. It's about having barriers fall away when you're in the right place at the right time. It's so much easier that way.
Yeah, it's that flow experience, right, Steve?
The what experience?
The flow experience. Yeah.
Yes, the slow. It's like fasting, only it's slower.
Well, flow, F-L-O-W.
Oh, it's, flow, yes, flow.
Yeah,
exactly.
It doesn't feel, it's like you're being moved, like you're in a river on a raft and, you know, the current's moving and you're just moving with it.
As somebody who, when it comes to patience, I tell people, I got tired of waiting in line, I didn't get any. And so I think that that's really been one of my great lessons, because I'm one of the, I get an idea and I'll just take the machete and, you know, try to slash away at the jungle. And I'm finding that, you know, there's a masculine and feminine principle to everything and in doing business. And you know, the masculine represents the structure and the doingness. The feminine represents the receivingness and the beingness. And, you know, just as surely as you can't exhale unless you've inhaled first, you can't be moving forward simply on the action and structure unless there is a foundation of being, a foundation of love, a foundation of being attuned with something bigger than we are. I know it sounds very abstract, but consider this, how growth and protection, masculine and feminine, are both necessary. If you consider the shell that protects the egg, it's very, very important. However, when it's time for the chicken to be born, the eggshell has to break. What this tells us is that structure always follows essence. So in order for life to move forward, sometimes the structures we've built for ourselves have to break. Sometimes these structures are businesses. Sometimes these structures are relationships. Sometimes these structures are belief systems. Sometimes these structures are what was a spiritual practice that doesn't serve us any longer. And so when we put the essence first, if we put life and love first, and the structures that we build are built around that, then I think we have a much more enduring model and a better shot at success and fulfillment.
Absolutely. And you're pointing to another great thing here, that this new conscious business, this new world that's arising, it's not going to be found in the old. And the feminine principle of being open and receiving is really, really key, because the folks that are on this call are the ones that are creating the new conscious business. And the way that you're going to create it is by those steps that you mentioned earlier. It's by that awareness. It's by creating that intention. It's by tuning in to where the flow is and where it's not. And you're going to come up with new ways of doing all kinds of things. It's not going by the rule book. I think this is the other thing that I've been noticing. It's when two people come together and they partner on something or more, you're like in a creative thunderstorm. It's like there's so much energy and there's so much possibility that many, many, many new things are going to be coming through, but not unless you really start really getting comfortable with just opening to what you don't know. And I loved in your book you were talking about, you know, all the things that, you know, assume, the things that you assume are true. What if they weren't true? I think that was in the first chapter.
Yeah, what if everything you know is wrong?
Yeah, something like that.
And I think that this is another very, very important reason for having and gathering community, is that, if you're creating something that's outside the box, you want to make sure that you have people who are simultaneously grounded and visionary. I was in my backyard talking to my tree. I have a tree that I talk to. And the tree downloaded its philosophy to me. And basically the tree's philosophy was feet on the ground, head in the skies, heart in the middle, eye on the prize.
Mm.
And that's how the tree does it. The tree is very grounded, couldn't be more grounded unless it was a rock. Tree is grounded, tree is rooted in the ground, and yet it's reaching out to the sky. It's got its head in the sky. And as human beings, the gift that we've been given that distinguishes us from so many other species is our loving heart. That's a underused gift that we have. And that heart is in the middle. That's where we get our nourishment from spirit and from other people. And our eye on the prize, that is that thing that people have often told us is unattainable. But we know it's ours to do. And we want to put ourselves with people who will reinforce that, but who are also grounded themselves and are going for a similar, quote-unquote, impossible dream that is eminently possible.
Yes. Let's take another question. We've got Kate from Hot Springs National Park. Steve, please talk about humor itself as a commodity, as an important consumable product for the future, the importance of humor, and the practicality of being in the humor business.
Wow, I want to meet this person. You know, the problem with humor, nobody takes it seriously. And that's a joke, and it's true. Well, you know, the fact is that humor is such a phenomenal lubricant because it allows new ideas to come in under the radar. And, you know, without touting my own, well, I'm going to tout my own product. I have an ebook coming out next week from today. It's called Wake Up Laughing, An Insider's Guide to the Cosmic Comedy. And if you send me an email at info@wakeuplaughing.com, I will send you a little information about that. That's what this book is precisely about. It's cultivating, it's calling forth a different kind of humor that not only leaves people laughing, but leaves them smiling, that actually can bring people together, enhance creativity, and I see that there is a great, great future for that kind of humor because we need the humor to release these oxymoronic notions that we have that we take for granted as reality. Like, for example, how about holy war? There's one. I mean, the total insanity of that. I mean, holy cow pie, holy war, and the Holy Land. It's crazy. You know, and just the other oxymoron that when people actually propose a sane world, other people look at them as crazy. So, Kate, wherever you are out there in some national park, send me an email at info@wakeuplaughing.com. I want to find out what you're doing, what kind of humor you're doing, because we are looking to cultivate an entirely new kind of humor that heals the heart and frees the mind.
Beautiful. Thank you, Kate, for that question. That was wonderful. Let's take a question from Terry in Princeton. How do we balance the need to make a living with our desire to create community, evolve spiritually, and assist others in doing so?
Well, that's really a very powerful question. That is the question that everybody is asking right now because the house of credit cards economy has tumbled down. And, you know, the trans is broken. We've been living, certainly for the last 30 years, certainly since the beginning of the Reagan era, we've been living in a trans that only money matters and money is what has the right to rule. And now we're kind of in a hangover after this drunken binge of derivatives and derivatives of derivatives of derivatives, and finding out that, as Gertrude Stein said, there's no there there. So I think what's really important right now is to, first of all, recognize how can I upscale my life and downscale my footprint? In other words, what can I do in terms of quality of life that will weave me into a community where I will be using less resources, but not at the expense of my happiness, in a way that's going to expand my happiness. In terms of making a living, let's take those terms out of our vocabulary. because the idea of making a living, it inherent in that idea is that somehow you have to, in order to have the right to live, somehow you have to be indebted to some entity where you're being paid for what you do. In the body, our cells receive ATP, which is the coin of the realm, the energy, the way the body stores and transports energy. And a cell never has to worry about where its next hit of ATP is coming from. It's understood that there is this flow. So instead of making a living, instead of that, ask yourself, how can I be in the flow and how can I contribute to more flowing? Again, I'm involved in a lot of very, very interesting projects. I just finished performing and attending a conference called the Economics of Peace Conference. There are a lot of new forms that relate to new ways of loaning money, new currencies, new currency exchanges, slow money based on organic food and the businesses that flow from there. So this is a conversation that is going to really be developing over the next 2 to 5 years.
Yeah, this is a big one, and I've noticed as soon as I start the internal conversation, once you start shifting that from making a living, to making life, it the energy shifts because you're lined up with a different frequency. There's a whole new wave of consciousness that's available for people who are aligned with their essence in integrity, really want to offer and serve and contribute. And once you start aligning yourself with that and internally, you will start seeing things show up externally that will create abundance for you. But I think
the beingness has to come first.
Yeah, it has to be. And this is, it's not about starting an external movement, even though the external movement is happening. This is it starts internally, because really it's I've said this has been my mantra since, January 2009, transformation begins in your own zip code. It starts here and then it ripples outward, and as it ripples outward, it's this magnetic thing that you were talking about earlier, Steve. It's that you magnetize people, the opportunities, the doors start opening, people call you out of the blue. But the thing is, it's also a timing thing in terms of the energy of your putting out consistently. It's like you're broadcasting it, and not only broadcasting it, but you're being it. You're being it in every opportunity. Instead of the take, you give, you open. Instead of closing down, you're available. And, life can't help but respond in kind, because that's how life works. That's how energy works. So that whole movement of making a living is gone.
and I know that people have these immediate conversations about their current bank balance and all of that, and I think that this is the biggest challenge, and right now is to keep your eye on the prize while having to deal with whatever is in front of you the economy as it is and so on. And I think that in finding other people, in being in community, if we think that there's a lot of shame around sexuality, there's way more shame around money, and people are ashamed of how much money they owe. Mm-hmm. And there's many, many people who, who refinanced their home, not because they wanted to buy a lot of expensive stuff, but because they wanted to start a business that they cared about, or in some cases, to simply pay the bills when their income shrunk or they were unemployed. So I think that there's a lot of shame and blame going around in regards to the orgy of greed and illusory expansion that's gone on in our financial system. And now it's simply back to, is it food? Is it energy? Is it love? Is it imagination? Is it community? And the more of those you can include in whatever your business is, then the more likely your business is to succeed.
Wonderful. I wanted to take one last question because this is perfect. And then I'm going to give folks the link so that if they want to get your book, they can go over and get that. And I will be sending these links, folks, in the emails afterwards, and I will also put the links up on the replay page just in case you're not getting my emails. And by the way, check spam and junk folders because that's where they're ending up. So this one is from Jeff in Revere. Do you believe that through humor we can help others to connect to their higher consciousness?
Absolutely. Now, you know that there's all different kinds of humor. In my e-book, and I'm really going to recommend that you check it out. It's only 10 bucks. I talk about the four stages of full realization. And often what happens is we get stuck in the third stage where we become conscious that we've been fooled. And a lot of really, really good humor comes out of there where, you know, we talk about how we've been fooled by this and we're not going to be fooled by that. We point out some of the foibles of human beings. But there's a fourth stage of full realization. I call it the cosmic fool. It's the conscious, innocent fool that if the humor is able to bring, you know, it's really good to have humor that deconstructs what needs to be deconstructed. But somehow it needs to deconstruct the mental structures and leave people standing and leave people smiling. And the kind of humor that I hope that I'm doing and the kind of humor that I seek to find and proliferate is humor that brings love back into the equation, that allows us to dissolve cynicism. You know, those of us who've, you know, maybe if we remember back as far as the 1950s, we remember that humor was a little bit more open-hearted. You know, we remember maybe Red Skelton and folks like that. What's happened, since the 60s is that humor has become synonymous with cynicism. And so in order to be sharp, you have to be cynical. That's changing now, and we want to help change that. That's the kind of humor that can really transform consciousness.
Absolutely. Wow. Wonderful. Let me tell folks where they can get Spontaneous Evolution. And also, it's consciousbusinesstelesummit.com/evolution. And that's just a redirect link, so it makes it easier for you to find it. consciousbusinesstelesummit.com/evolution. And if you want to get on Steve's mailing list so he can let you know when his ebook, Full Realization, what is it, The Art of...
It's called Wake Up Laughing.
Wake Up
an
Laughing.
An Insider's Guide to the Cosmic Comedy.
Wonderful. So info@wakeuplaughing.com. And he also sent a couple of articles to us that you'll get as a bonus, and you'll be getting that later on this week. So I'm going to unmute the line so we can all say, Steve, thank you so much. We could speak at least for another 4 hours, and there's so much more to cover. But I appreciate your being at the Conscious Business Telesummit this time around, and we look forward to having you here again.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure for me, and hope to meet everybody out there on the outer net one of these days.
Absolutely. Thank you. All right, so we're going to go off mute. All right, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.